everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Real Time Crime. I'm one of your hosts, Leah Lamar, and I've got with me
Teddy Mellencamp. Hi.
Hi, Teddy. Teddy, I think the real crime is, how are you so naturally beautiful?
I think the real crime is that you have a background now that shows you as like a real detective, and I still have my original background.
I want to just let you know that I'm sweating through my coat, and I thought it would be fun, but it's not fun. It doesn't feel fun. It feels very hot and not in the sexy fun way.
But it's making your face look very glowy.
It's
giving you a good glow. A natural glow. Dimitri, did we hear you laugh?
Did we say you could?
I tried to muffle it. Are you allowed to speak on this podcast? Listen, one of our producers, Dimitri. Hello, Dimitri.
Hello. Here's the thing. I said I would speak very minimally, but I'm not allowed to mute. And if you guys are going to sit there like saying stuff like that, I'm going to laugh. I'll muffle it as much as I can, but this is going to happen.
I'm sorry. We were talking about the beautiful glow I have on my face from my trench coat. Thank you.
I thought it was funny that you got this trench coat to look, you know, inspectory, and now you're super uncomfortable. And I don't know. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, this isn't quite the right fit for me. You know, I thought crime, but make it fashion. But Zara doesn't know how to do crime.
Well, but we do, which is why we need to get to business, guys. And I have to start by saying thank you to one of our listeners who sent me a DM about the Gabby Petito case, which, of course, there's been some updates, but also not any more information on finding Brian. But something we didn't think about. Remember the last text that she was sending about Stan, where I was saying maybe Brian was sending the Stan text. Somebody named Justine sent me a DM and said, maybe it wasn't about someone named Stan. Maybe Stan meant send the authorities now.
I just got the chills down my spine. Is that a known entity?
I don't know. I was just going through my DMs when I was, because you guys were a couple of minutes late, just saying. And
I wasn't late.
Wait a minute.
No. I clocked in at 11:29. So I wasn't let in on time.
We didn't click in until 11:31. So whoever, maybe it was Dimitri. But
Dimitri, sure. You want Teddy to think I'm late?
Listen, guys, that was totally my fault. I don't know. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the blame on this, Dimitri. But Teddy, okay, so is Stan actually, is this something that is common practice? Because I don't know. It seems I like this theory. I mean, I don't like it, but it's an interesting theory. However, if she was really in help, don't you think she would just be more direct about it? I mean,
maybe she was scared he would look at her phone. I mean, didn't he end up with her phone?
That's interesting.
That's such a detailed thing. Like, unless somebody knew this is a code and knew there's no way someone's going to see that and be like, oh, S-T-A-N. Oh, that's probably send the authorities now. Like, unless they had a code set up to know about, I appreciate the input from Justine, but that seems a little far-fetched for me.
It's very creative and insightful and possibly true. However, it is also odd that her grandfather's name is Stan.
Very true. But I did have to say, because it's something that we did miss.
It is a coincidence and we did miss it. But I also just want to, just for the listeners, go back for 3 seconds and talk about the last podcast that we had. During the taping of our podcast, we got the news of her autopsy and the results of her death, which we found out was strangulation and throttling. But they haven't yet identified any additional information. Well, they might have, but they didn't clue us into that. For example, whether or not she was under the ground or above the ground, if there was any DNA evidence on her body. So we don't have any of that information just yet, but we have been clued into the cause of death. We already knew it was homicide, but we didn't have that additional information. So I just wanted to use that as a springboard to move forward with the Gabby Petito case and new information that we have.
And later on in the episode, we are going to actually have on a private detective who is going to answer so many questions that I think will help us decipher some of the things that we are so, you know, lost on as just individuals trying to decipher the case, like all of the other sleuths out there wanting to understand what Brian is doing. Like something that I was thinking about, I was watching the 60 Minutes Australia that Gabby's parents and stepfather did, was do innocent people run ever?
And I think we heard innocent people don't run.
Right.
It's interesting because I don't want to parlay this away from this case because we have so much to talk about. And I know with our private investigator, Jeff McGrath, we will go in depth into detail. But this is also tying into Robert Durst, who's now back in the media, because innocent people don't run is a very interesting concept because we both know that he ran and was claiming his innocence. But of course, he has now been convicted of murder of his best friend, Susan Berman, and life in jail without parole. However, he's now on a ventilator in the hospital with COVID-19. I want to just tell you right now, I'm holding my tongue. And Dimitri, don't you dare.
Listen, I mean, here, you're here. That's what this is for. Don't hold your tongue.
I mean, you know, I have so many thoughts about it. Am I allowed to completely derail from Gabby Petito at the moment and swing over to Robert Durst? Or,
well, I mean, I think first off, he wasn't wearing his mask correctly in court.
Well, he kept taking it off and putting it back on, apparently. And I think it's probably because he was having trouble breathing. And I think a lot of the people closest to him have been taking COVID tests, making sure that they're negative, and canceled their personal travel plans as well, from what I've read on the news. Did I just say news? On the news. Wow, am I a 1940s detective? But
the trench coat, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I'm honestly boiling in here. This was a poor choice. I just want to let everyone know that I did make a mistake this morning.
I mean, can you, not to stop and derail here, but can you just take it off? That's not like a dickie underneath, right? Like that's a full
Dimitri,
shirt.
Dimitri, did you just ask me to take my trench coat off?
There we go.
Oh, no. Now we're getting all kinds. Well,
HR.
I okay. just meant if it meant you would be more comfortable. Oh, my God. This is getting worse.
Dimitri,
okay, go
I'm
ahead.
This will come back to haunt.
Is there
all
a producer here? Can we cut this out? Oh, wait.
No, keep it in. It's hilarious. But also, okay. Also, I think it's important for me to make note of the fact that there is a lot of comedy in tragedy, and there's a time and a place for comedy. I'm a comedian, and we all know that. And so sometimes the way that I deal with uncomfortable information is to make jokes about it. But there's nothing funny about murder, and I don't think that it works for me to make jokes about that. And I'm a human being, and I feel for all the people that have passed, but I'd like to just make a note of the fact that the things and elements surrounding cases, I like to add moments of levity for my heart and my brain, because that's how I process pain and trauma. And if you ever watch my stand-up, you will also see that it's basically me just punching down on myself. So I just make fun of myself mercilessly. And oh boy, if you've ever dated me, I'm so sorry. But that's a warning to all the men out there. Now, I'd like to go back into quickly talking about Robert Durst again. So
you also don't want to date him because he did murder his ex-wife.
He is a millionaire. I know. Well, allegedly, he has not been convicted of murdering his ex-wife yet. She is missing and she has never been found. He was convicted recently of murdering Susan Berman, his best friend, and allegedly because she was going to meet with the press over details of that she may or may not have known what happened to his ex-wife. And then she mysteriously went, she didn't go missing. She was just flat out murdered. And she was shot execution style in the back of the head. And there were no signs of forced entry, which means that it was a friend or someone she knew that she welcomed into her home. And then she was shot execution style in the back of the head. And so, Teddy, I know you watched Jinx.
Of course. And what they are implying on the show, on the documentary, was she was Susan Berman was also having money trouble, and it wasn't something that was be above her to potentially or allegedly blackmail someone by saying, if you don't pay me, I am going to come forward with this information. So in the documentary, they had said that could potentially had been the cause of why this ended up happening.
It's also interesting because Robert gave her, I think, over $100,000, especially close to the last few months of her life. And I know that he was going to visit her for the holidays, which she apparently was super excited about. And the documentary gave me chills for a number of reasons. Obviously, for anyone who's watched all the way to the end, no spoilers, but to spoil, he says, I killed them all. When his mic is still hot and he's in the bathroom. Also, listening to the man nearly vomit and pee and talk about his burping while he's realizing he got from his handwriting and the block letters and the misspelling of the word Beverly on the letters. I mean, it was a little much for me, to be honest. I was like, we're too close and personal with this man. Couldn't they have edited out the farting and the burping?
No. For anyone that doesn't know what, when the mic's hot, the mic hot doesn't mean it's like warm on you. The mic hot means...
Doesn't mean it's wearing a little trench coat.
Yeah. No, like I didn't know about the mic hot until I personally was on a reality television show. And like, I thought if there wasn't a camera like facing me at the moment that I was done. I was like in the clear. No, if there is a mic pack on you, you are, anything you say can and will be held against you.
And it's, what's so ironic is that the comedy club that I created on Clubhouse is called Hot on the Mic. And it's twofold. It's a double entendre because everyone who does comedy there is sexy. Okay. But then also, Dimitri hates me. He can't even look at me. And then the other reason is because comedians there are doing crowd work left and right and you're just going. There's no way to just turn your mic off and stop talking. Anything that you say could be recorded at any time. And usually everything is hilarious. So, you know, I think that it's really interesting. Obviously, what Robert Durst says is not hilarious, but I think it's interesting that there was some foreshadowing before that final moment where they take a break during the interview. Do you remember this, Teddy? They take a break and he starts talking and saying out loud to himself when he thinks that the mic is off because he doesn't realize that you actually have to turn the mic pack off manually, basically. And he just starts talking to himself. He's like, intentionally, did I intentionally lie? You didn't intentionally lie. You could leave things out. And his lawyer comes over to him and is like, your mic is hot. We just heard everything you said.
Oh yeah. Because you can tell that he's actually trying to prep himself on what he's going to say in the next interview piece. Like you do that in any interview. If you're like about to join an interview, the problem is his mic was on, he's being recorded and he's doing it about murder.
The thing is that it's very clear he's hyper intelligent. He's an extremely smart man. Obviously, he has gotten away allegedly with multiple murders until recently. And I mean,
he has very.
And again, also, I mean, if you've got an endless pot of money, throw some money at the problem, make it go away. He had, you know, $150,000 worth of fees that he sent toward lawyers originally just to get the two best lawyers on the case to help him get out of the Morris Black murder.
I mean, I think it was more than was it 150,000 or?
Well, 250 was his bail. And then,
but also he won because his current was either fiance or wife.
And I actually love her.
She,
can I just say that she is your sassy New Yorker.
She frightened me.
Great. I was like, is that me in 20 years from now?
Well, now you frightened me.
Hopefully not married to a serial killer, but she was just so straightforward.
Well, she was, you can tell she's very concerned about the money. She's very concerned. She is really revved. She's upset that he wasn't a part of the business. She doesn't even care about the murder situation. She's like, anyways, I'm upset that you weren't a part of the business, that your brothers pushed you out. Like, she's like, this is why we need the top lawyers, because we need your hand more in the money.
Well, she also told him that she would divorce him if he didn't get rid of his first lawyer, because the first lawyer wanted him to plead insanity. And if you pled insanity, then they would get in control of all of the money, and that she wouldn't get any of the money.
Yeah, she had a bit, you know, she saw dollar signs all of the time. And
look, all I'm saying is, smart woman.
But he had very
not sure
little
that's
patience.
The lesson here, but go I don't, on.
Oh, yeah, no, you're right.
You could write a book, How to Marry a Serial Killer, but an alleged serial killer. But
alleged.
His patience level is not high. Because even when he was talking about his first wife, Kathy, and he was talking about her mother, and he was talking, I mean, granted, we all have, you know, mother-in-laws, they can be a little bit tricky. But he was like, was talking about how Kathy would get bummed, or the mom would get bummed because he couldn't talk to her. And he was like, she would read these magazines, and then he would start blinking away. And then he'd be like, and I don't care. You know, I couldn't be bothered. I don't want to talk about her magazines. And you're just sitting there and you're like, you couldn't give her 2 minutes. You couldn't give 2 minutes of time.
It's interesting because I think that the documentary at first kind of humanizes him a little bit. And you can see the way, in my opinion, the interviewer starts to build this rapport with him, which by the end of the series, you can see that he also is kind of bummed that he finally realizes that he is a murderer. And I think he truly wanted to believe that it wasn't so, and that he was kind of painted incorrectly. But it's really hard. Every time I listen to any of the conversations he has, it's really hard to see a serial killer as someone who ends every conversation with the words, bye-bye. And I don't know how that's possible to make him look innocent or nice or kind, but the way that he carries himself and the way that he made an entire jury laugh during his trial against the murder of Morris Black lets you know that it probably was difficult for him to be nailed down as a murderer, because there's something about him that is so charming and is probably the reason why he survived this long without getting taken down.
But I think also something I want to ask Jeff about is his mother's suicide and what that plays into what you turn into. Like, are you born this way? Or is this something that after seeing such a traumatic event that you become?
Teddy, another great point you brought up.
Thank you.
Teddy, you're so good with these details. Okay, so something that I found interesting was that him and Susan Berman bonded immediately because they both had parents die at an early age. And Susan's dad was in the mob.
Right.
And, you know, she was a self-proclaimed mafia princess. And so, you know, they actually originally thought that her death was by mob because the execution style hit is very mafia-like.
Right.
Until, you know, they realized it was Robert. But I think that in this case, the fact that both of them had parents die from an early age and that Robert witnessed his mother's suicide, there's an impact that it has on young children where it creates personality disorders.
Right.
And whether it's borderline personality, narcissistic personality, psychopathy, sociopath tendencies, there are different ways in which this starts to manifest in young children. And so a lot of it's almost as if when you read about narcissism, that children who have narcissistic traits are usually because they were either ill-parented as children or had a lack of a parent growing up. And
it's childhood abuse, essentially, also, and blocking out certain memories. But also, not only did she commit suicide, he also had to live a lie, because it came forward, like they announced it as that she fell.
Yeah.
So he's now covering up as a child. Not only are you forced to live that you saw your mother commit suicide, you now are living a lie for your entire family that that's not what happened.
And historically, the sickness is in the secrets.
Yeah.
And so, I think it feels like he spent his entire lifetime just not trying to get justice for it in a way, because I think that for him, he felt probably so slighted and was probably never felt seen or heard and was denied the experience of grief and trauma. And so, I mean, not denied the experience of trauma, just denied the experience of grief. And so I don't know if he lacked empathy growing up because he didn't know how to grieve or wasn't allowed to grieve. I mean, also, God, sorry, I'm a ramble city today, but I also remember hearing in the documentary about how he went to his mother's funeral and he didn't quite understand what was happening. And they said, you know, mommy's always going to be with you. And he goes, wait, mommy's in the box. Why is mommy going in the ground? And tried to stop the guy from lowering the casket into the ground. That's so traumatic.
And especially if they never got him any help afterwards and anyone to talk to, or, and I don't know what the situation, how it was different for his siblings, because in the documentary, they don't say anything if like the dad brought any of the other siblings out to watch that, or if it was only him.
I also think it kind of robs you of a childhood in a way. Of course, this is my personal opinion, but when you are forced to be a secret keeper, aka an adult from an early age, and you're allowed to speak your truth or seek your truth, I think that there's a disconnect in your brain. And I think that he missed out on his, I think it stunts your growth emotionally. And so you kind of are just living as an adult, but in the emotional brain of a child, essentially.
And something that ties these two cases together, actually, the Robert Durst and the Gabby Petito case, is also the domestic abuse. Because in both cases, and Robert Durst kind of kept dismissing it, actually. He kept saying, you know, it wasn't like I hit her. I was just like shoving and slapping. Like that's no big, like he just kept saying it is like, oh, well, no, that wasn't a big fight. That was just a shoving and slapping fight.
Yeah. So what? She fell to the floor. It's like, what?
Oh, yeah. Like it was this. And when you watched Gabby talk about it, she was like, well, no, it wasn't. He didn't really hit me. He just, you know, pinched my face or, you know, whatever it was. But it's always when it's just, you know, that's when you know. There's
making
real
excuses for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, God, it's like there are 1,000 details I want to go into. And there's also something to be said about the fact that, again, both Brian and Robert ran. The only difference is that Robert was hiding in plain sight and he was dressing as a woman in disguise in Galveston, Texas, before he before there was self-defense and along with the killing of Morris Black, or so it was ruled, but I think they're looking into that again, because he then eviscerated his body and put them in bags and threw them in a body of water. So I think that's something that they're revisiting.
Well, and which brings me to the next question. When I was doing all of this research for today, something that kept coming up when I was researching serial killers was, if somebody has killed multiple people, but they do it in order to protect their freedom, are they considered serial killers versus somebody that kills because they get off on killing?
Yeah, I think they're both serial killers.
It's just a different theme as to why they're doing it. But yeah, if you're killing multiple people, it just, you know, just getting rid of them whenever you feel like it, I think you have to fall under that category.
Well, my question is, do you think Robert Durst killed because he was a stone cold killer, or allegedly, or do you think that he killed because he just wanted to protect his from getting put in jail? Like when I think about Brian Laundrie, I think he had rage always.
Well, it seems like Brian and Robert had that in common. Yeah. And if Kathy, whose body has never been found to this day, so if her disappearance was actually a murder,
right,
and perhaps it was something similar to the Gabby Brian situation where it was a passion of crime, a strangulation, and then, you know, maybe he freaked out, buried her, whatever he did to the body, it's never been found. And then the fact that Susan Berman just randomly was murdered when she was about to speak to the police and cooperate with authorities, it doesn't seem like he's killing because that to me just shows that he is refusing to admit take accountability. That he's a murderer.
Yeah, he's refusing to take accountability.
Also, I just want to let everyone know, not only do I not have a sociology or psychology degree, but these are just my thoughts and opinions, and I'm probably wrong. Thank you. on half of the things I'm saying, just to be clear.
I think legally you didn't have to throw in that you're probably wrong. Well, I think all the allegedly is nice. It's a nice touch. But
yeah, we're just trying to sound smart here. Is it working, Dimitri?
I think all of this is obviously speculation, and, you know, we're all doing our best to figure out what it is that makes people tick. And something that I think that I want to dig into, especially once we get him on, is why everybody has been so closed. Why the FBI has been so closed, you know, everything's been so kept quiet, especially when Gabby's body was found one day after a YouTuber showed where the van was. The van was shown on a Saturday and Gabby's body was found on a Sunday, the day after.
And so is the question, why are they not filling us in more of the details?
Yeah, if we could help. Not me, but if people could help.
Listen, the more he's gone and hiding, he's not going to come out and be like, oh, I was just camping. What happened? Fill me in. Like, obviously, we all have our own opinions. I don't think there's many people out there that think he's not responsible for this. And we don't know whether he is or not. But I think everybody feels that way. And so the longer he's gone, the more it just points to that. So it's like, where does this end, to your point, Leah?
Also, I thought it was interesting that they said strangulation by human. They made note of that. And I was like, what are the other strangulation by snake, by
I think
alien,
a snake
by...
is the only...
It was just such an...
By
odd
the way,
thought.
According to Demi Lovato, you can't say alien anymore.
Oh, you're right. Demi's going to cancel me. I know it's very offensive to the extraterrestrials. Is that word offensive?
You can say
it should be, because it's extra. You're not even calling them to it. Now you're saying extra, like they're not needed. It's dismissive.
I'm also extra. I just call, if you guys could refer to me as extra Leah, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Do we want to dig in a little bit, speaking of whatever Brian's eating, about the peanut butter sandwiches at all?
Yeah.
Did you say, were you like, Jiff? Okay. So according to the United States Department of Justice, Jonathan Toby from Annapolis, Maryland, was allegedly willing to sell sensitive details about our nuclear powered submarines of foreign government and hid that info in half of a peanut butter sandwich. Yeah. The Department of Justice said that Toby was a Department of the Navy employee who had been assigned to the Naval Nuclear Propulsion. I don't even know how to say this word. That's just how
you're doing great.
Propulsion program. His work as a nuclear engineer allowed him to receive top secret security clearance through the U.S. Department of Defense, as well as Q clearance from the U.S. Department of Energy, which gave him access to secret restricted data. Okay, but here's the part that really hits me. He doesn't even really do his research enough to know that he is sneaking it to the proper people and is giving it to the actual FBI.
I mean, in my opinion, I'm looking forward to seeing the transcript of their messages to each other, because for me, there has to be something in there of him being like, hey, just curious, do you have a peanut allergy? And You know, I'm just so curious to know. That's how you know Jonathan isn't a little bitch, because he can eat peanuts. But
Jonathan was obviously born before 1990, because Jonathan isn't allergic to peanuts.
Yeah. And I'm also wondering what kind. Was it the crunchy? Was it creamy?
I mean, it sounds like a children's book. The fact that he was sneaking it out on peanut butter sandwiches, that's like Encyclopedia Brown or Ivy and Bean or pick your.
Yeah, as someone who was a vegetarian from the age of 12 to 20 and only had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches of all of high school every single day, I will tell you, I did think I was better than everyone. And
I told everybody I was a vegetarian when I was a kid. And then my mom never felt the need to tell me that hot dogs were, I mean, I guess they're not really meat either, but I would still eat hot dogs. And she was like, at some point she's going to realize that this
that is so means hilarious.
She's not a vegetarian. Oh, wow.
All right. So, well, just really quickly, because I do love the idea of the PB and the peanut butter sandwich conversation. The fact that they went to West Virginia, first, let me just say, there are so few Jews in West Virginia that in order to have a minyan, which is 10 or more Jewish men in case of a funeral, they have to import them from other places. There are so few Jews in West Virginia, so I'll never go there. But
why do you know that?
Because I went to school in Virginia.
Oh, and you were like, don't cross the border. There's
and
no
I was
Jews
like, never
there.
Go to the never yeah. go to the West one. It's very scary. Okay, but... And that's how I know that I would never be involved in any sort of FBI situation, because if they go to West Virginia, it's just not worth it to me. I also thought it was interesting they were paying him in crypto. They were paying him in Monero.
I know.
For anyone who doesn't know, is cryptocurrency.
Well, yes, between that and Dogecoin, all the things. Guys, I think we're going to have to take a little break because... We've got to bring in Jeff. Wait. No, we do have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll bring Jeff, the PI, and we'll get some real details for y'all, not just our opinions.
We just cucked Dimitri so hard.
No, that's exactly what I wanted. I was going to say, Jeff is in the waiting room. Let's take a break. You just saw me raise my hand and you were like, oh, we have him so under our thumb, he has to raise his hand. But Teddy's right. Let's go to a break.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Real Time Crime. We have with us now someone I'm very excited to introduce, Jeff McGrath, who is a private investigator. We're going to speak with Jeff a little bit about some Gabby Petito updates, Robert Durst, peanut butter sandwich spies, and get his take on all of this. He is a DUI expert. He is super successful in accident investigation reconstruction scenes. And Jeff is the retired police officer, motorcycle traffic DUI officer, and drug recognition expert. Jeff, thanks for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me. You guys make me happy.
Well, okay.
Wow, Jeff.
Right the now podcast.
It's a break in my day, and I love it.
So you're ready for us to grill you? I mean.
Go ahead. Grill me. You can't be any worse than any attorney that's hit me.
Nothing could be hotter than how I feel in this trench coat right now. That's all I'm gonna say.
So, okay, let's just start with something easy. Where's Brian Laundrie?
He's not in the continental United States, that I'm pretty much sure of.
And how do we know that, Jeff?
Well, we don't know that for certain, but, you know, the suspicion behind the camping trip with his parents, I think that was just to plan his getaway.
How much money does it actually take to disappear?
I could do it for $20.
Really?
Or less. Yeah. Yeah. If you
$20 out of the country?
If you're willing to live off the grid and you can find some fisherman that said, you know, hey, can you just get me 100 miles out to sea? You can find somewhere, especially if you're in Florida. There's a lot of areas that you could go where you leave the continental U.S. in just a short time.
And Jeff, and if people, I find a Groupon for $10, will you match that price?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Where are you going,
to
Leah?
Use Groupon?
Yeah, don't you use Groupon for your murder getaway?
Right.
And if somebody already knows who you are and what you look like and all those things, how do you get a burner phone?
Oh, anybody can get a burner phone. You can go pop into a Circle K and get a burner phone. You can use an alias name. You could have a prepaid debit card that doesn't track you in advance, and you could take care of that. You could have a burner phone, no issues. I deal with a lot of people with burner phones, and some of them, I've found three or four of them.
Wow. How do you find people if they have burner phones?
Typically, I don't find them through the phone because any reverse phone search doesn't turn up results. That's how I know it's a burner. But then I look for activities and things that people usually are creatures of habit. Even though they try to break that, they will start to falter back towards something. And eventually you can catch them.
And what would you say the reasoning behind Brian's parents not speaking to Gabby's parents at all would be?
I don't think they have any desire in speaking to them. They haven't shown any concern that Brian's even missing. And I don't think they want to fully cooperate because they can be charged.
So in your opinion, you don't think it could potentially be because the FBI has told them it's better for them to stay quiet?
No, I guarantee you an attorney that they have has told them it's better to stay quiet. The FBI wants them to talk.
Well, Jeff, so some people reported that they saw him on the Appalachian Trail. Do you think that there's any chance that he's there? And if not, do you think that there are a lot of people on the Appalachian Trail who have committed crimes that are hiding?
Oh, probably. Have you ever been to the Appalachian Trail?
No. But for this reason?
it's a long trail, but I guarantee you there's some people there with that have committed some crimes. Absolutely. You don't know who your neighbor is sometimes. So yeah, you run into somebody who's living off the grid in the Appalachians. That would make me kind of wonder. I've taken my kids camping just out here in the desert and seen some really shady stuff. So I can imagine what the Appalachian Trail is.
If he was on the Appalachian Trail, which I know you don't think that he is, how long could you live off the grid without anything?
Depends on his background. If he has any survival training, you know, somebody with that type of training, wilderness survival, they could survive years out there. If they know how to get their own food and shelter and water, they could be fine. But I don't think he has that training that, you know, you would expect to see somebody living off the grid as a mountain man.
I used to once date a guy who lived off the land and eviscerated animals so that he could feed himself and made his own clothing. And now I'm starting to wonder if I should call the FBI.
You should probably let me know who he is so I can look your background on.
He always said that if the apocalypse happened, I should go back to his house. But I feel like he's the last person I'd want to be around during an apocalypse.
I think that's standard pickup line.
Thank you, Country.
Is that on his like Tinder app? I can't.
It's his profile.
That's his tag. I cannot with that. Okay, speaking of the media stuff, because you brought up that he's all over the media, do you think for somebody like him with his personality type, do you think this is like feeding his ego? Do you think he's sitting around watching it? Do you think that, or do you think he's completely away from it all?
I think he's a sociopath is what I think. I think he's an abuser. And I don't think he really thinks twice about it. He may be very egocentric and self-centered, and it may be feeding his ego. I don't see that in what I've heard of him, but it wouldn't be uncommon for a sociopath to have those tendencies.
Can I ask a quick question? Back to his parents. Well, this is where the I didn't wait for the,
yeah, please,
Leah, Teddy, may I ask a question?
You may ask a question.
Thank you so much. What I don't get in terms of his parents is, okay, so if they're smart enough that they're covering all this up, right? But then they're not smart enough to play along and make it seem like they really don't know. Like, you, do they not trust their acting skills? Would you not talk to Gabby's family? Like, and if that's the case, if they're not good enough to act that way, then why haven't the police or the FBI gotten something from them while questioning them?
It's called lawyer up. And any cop will tell you that as soon as someone mentions attorney, you can no longer question them. That's their rights. It would be, I tell every one of my clients, shut up, don't talk to anybody. Every one of them, because you will ultimately incriminate yourself. So
that's what Leah and Teddy say to me, by the way, shut up, don't talk to anybody.
You know, any
I say, shush up, I'm a mother.
Yeah. And every time my parents ask me why I don't have children yet, I'll just say, you'll have to speak to my lawyer.
That'll work.
Yeah. But
okay, so sorry, Jeff, we obviously have 10 million more questions, by the way.
I know. I have so many, because also I watched this 60 Minutes thing last night. I told them earlier, and I was listening to Gabby's mother, and she was saying when the cops arrested, when the cops pulled them over for the slapping, and they were
in Moab.
Yeah. And when that happened, Gabby's mom was saying that she saw her daughter, and obviously it was a cry for help. You could see in her daughter's face. However, the cops that arrested them did not see that.
Yeah. And they didn't arrest them. They just separated them.
What did you see in that moment?
Well, in my state, as a police officer, your hands are tied. If you see marks and there's admission of physical contact, and you have witnesses that are not a part of the party saying that they saw the same thing, they both go to jail. That's in my state, you both go to jail. She said, and I think this is either out of fear or protecting him. She said, no, I hit him first. Mm. That would automatically put her in handcuffs as well. But the officer said, I see a mark on your face, and these people saw him punch you. So he would also go in handcuffs until they see a judge and they can be released. Why that didn't happen there, I don't know what their laws in Utah are surrounding domestic violence, but in Arizona, both parties go to jail in that situation. And I think she was either protecting him because she was either in love and going, oh, he didn't mean it, or she was scared because the retaliation will result in what it did.
And do you think this interview that the parents did can help an investigation or hurt it?
I think an interview in general can do both. It depends. If the attorney's there and he's been guiding the questions and they're very careful as to what they say, it can help the investigation. But there's times where they're going to be, there's information they just do not want to release because it could hinder. It could hinder them, but the police themselves would take it into a different investigation.
So I've got another question for you.
Okay.
What is the first, if we could just back up a little, what is the first step you take when you're looking for a missing person? Do you ever see patterns?
We look for patterns. The very first thing we do is we look for, where did they go missing? Where was the last place they were seen? Who was the last person to talk to them? Mm-hmm. Then we start working backwards from there. Okay, who talked to them before that? What did they do? Did you see any indications leading up to this? Then we look at bank accounts, credit card transactions. There's all kinds of avenues we go that I would call first. It's like as soon as you get a missing persons case, the first thing you do is about 1,000 things. So it's hard to say the very first thing you do. You want to analyze their patterns. What did they do before? And did it change recently? Like I said, people are always creatures of habit. You have to work hard at not changing or at changing your routine. So yeah, we'd look for those things.
And so when you guys are getting tipped off, when people are sending in tips, how do you know which ones to take seriously?
Well, that's a really difficult thing. You take every tip that comes in seriously, every one. And with the case I'm working right now, we've received everything from, we know who's holding them, his legs are broken, being held in a basement, and we have to take it all seriously. Sometimes people just are sick and twisted and they just want to, speak and put their two cents in. Sometimes people want to do it anonymously. I get a lot of burner phones that are sending texts that just are absolutely horrific and the father's reading them. But you vet each and every tip that comes in by who's given the tip, where was it seen, when was it seen or reported. And then you do have to do some investigation on those tips. So I could say, out of 10 tips, I'm probably going to be doing some legwork on 8 of them.
And do you think that YouTube and TikTok and all of these, trending things that have been happening around all of these high profile cases, do you think that it's helpful or hurtful?
I think it's hurtful. I think it's very hurtful. You get all these amateur investigators that want to poke into it and they start calling the investigator saying, oh, I found this. And hey, I found that. And oh, I talked to this person. This is something I'm dealing with right now. And I'm going, you know what? These are persons of interest for me. There's a reason we have not interviewed them yet. It's strategic. and now you jump in and start talking because you want to be an investigator, you're hurting my case. The only thing with publicity on that helps is getting the face out there. So if anybody's seen the person and basically some background information, that's what helps. The actual independent amateur investigators that there's thousands out there, and psychics, I should say, they don't help. They don't help at all. As a matter of fact, they slow you.
What about the case of the fact that the YouTube video that was released from Red, White, and Bethune, the van life couple family, the fact that that led them to find Gabby's body pretty directly? Would you say that there are some times when it's helpful and most of the time it's hurtful?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't make the blanket statement that every time some YouTuber or TikTok says something that it hurts. I can't say that. I can say a lot of times it does, because they're putting out false information or information they just don't know. And if they don't know the whole story, they're going to fill in the blanks with their own ideas.
Also, this is a question I've always wanted to know the answer to. And it's not quite relevant to this case, but why do so many people come forward saying that they murdered the person in question if they are not actually the murderer?
Wow, I'll never understand that. I don't have a psychology degree, and I don't look.
Me neither.
Yeah. And people do that. It will blow your mind how many times people want to come forward and take the
doesn't make any
sense. Take the blame. It doesn't make sense to me either. It really doesn't. And we have to work around that. And that's why we withhold information. Like in the situation where Gabby was strangled, that didn't come out till later because they wanted to confirm. That tells me there's other injuries to her. So it was probably a pretty bloody scene. Plus, she wasn't found till about 3 weeks after her death. So there's decomposition there. But as far as withholding, like how somebody died or what instrument was used, because when all these people say, hey, I did it last Tuesday at 2 p.m. Okay, well, what did you use to do this? We'll get them into an interrogation. And if they can't identify the proper weapon, you know, they were bludgeoned with the trophy found on a shelf. We're not going to release that information. We're going to say that it was blunt force trauma that killed
them. Well, speaking of confessions, can we also kind of bring up Robert Durst a little bit here?
Oh, all right.
Wait, Teddy, can I ask one final question about Gabby Petito? Because I'm just dying to know your take on this, Jeff. I'm sorry. Just real fast.
Oh, please.
So we know the cause of death now was homicide, and the autopsy said that it was by strangulation. And obviously signs are pointing to Brian Laundry, and we're waiting to hear about if there are any DNA samples. But I'm very curious your thoughts about that. But I'm more so curious to know why you think they said that Brian is not connected to the deaths of the two women who were also found murdered, but they won't tell us why they know that.
Because there's patterns you look for. If somebody is killing people in one area and they kill three people, you're going to see some common themes in there. Some very common things. If it's strangulation by Gabby, and then one person's shot and then another person stabbed, it could be the same person, but you got to look for different commonalities in these things. And they're not seeing it. They're just not seeing it at all. And I understand why. I think it's coincidental that this was close to in timing and together, but they're obviously seeing something that disconnects them. Doesn't connect.
So this does tie into the Robert Durst case and the fact that, do you think that serial killers often kill their subjects in the same way?
No, I don't. Okay. As in the case of Robert Durst, well, we don't know how his wife was killed because she hasn't been found. But, you know, he in 2001, when he shot somebody in self-defense and was acquitted of that, and then the one he was convicted of where execution style shot her in the back of the head. Those are common things. And that's his go-to. I mean, if you look at him, he's not a very strong man. It takes some strength to tussle with somebody, a man or a woman, and hold him down and strangle somebody. That takes some force, and it takes some time. Shooting is quick. Stabbing is very personal. Strangulation is very personal. Shooting is just, this is the easiest way. So, yeah.
I was going to say, so do you think that's why they never found the head to Morris Black's body after it was dismembered, because it would have shown evidence that he was also possibly shot execution style.
I do believe that. Yeah, there was something. I don't, and I think it's just, again, coincidental that they didn't find the head. He threw the, you know, chopped the body up, threw it in the sea, but the head could have been picked apart by sea life, and they were able to get other stuff.
How do you go with self? How do you go with self-defense when your reaction after doing that was to chop them up, put them in bags, and throw them in the water?
You know, I was talking to one of my detective partners about this, and I don't know. He had to have an amazing attorney and a dumb jury. I'm just saying, I'm putting it out there, because that is, it shows that there's some problems with that man. And the self-defense thing starts to go away when you cut up bodies. So I don't know how.
Not just that, but how, when you've said on camera, on tape, there it is, you're caught. What the hell did I do? How was that not enough to convict?
Well, that helped in their prosecution, but they just needed more. There was something they needed that was more. I'm not familiar with exactly what went down in the trial or what was presented as evidence. And you've got to remember, us as people, we get all this information fed to us through social media, through news, through podcasts, through everything. We get inundated with information and crimes. Now, the jury is not hearing all the information we hear. There is arguments from prosecution and defense attorneys constantly on what they're going to let in and what they won't let in. So the juries don't hear everything we're hearing, where we're going. How did they not see what we see? It's because they didn't have all the stuff put in front of them.
Do you think that how often are the persons of interest involved in letters and confessions such as Robert Durst?
How often?
Yeah. Like, you know how he is a part of writing the confessions and he.
Yeah. Well, OJ did it too. So, you know, I mean, I think, not having a psychology degree, what I think is people have something inside of them that they want to get this out. They want to get the information out. Now, if they're a sociopath with those egocentric qualities, they're going to want to brag about it. If they have some, you know, empathy or remorse for what happened, they might do it because it's cleansing them. That's the only way I can think of doing that. Some people want to taunt police too. You got to remember that people will do things because it's a game. It's a cat and mouse game, and they want to stay ahead, but they want to tip them off, but not really. And that happened back in the BTK killings, where they was taunting the police with the information and letters and all that. So yeah, people do it.
Do you think they want to be caught? Do you think they want to push the limit to see how far they can go, but that they ultimately do want to be caught or not caught?
I think they ultimately don't want to be caught, but I think they want to push the limit. They want to push the envelope.
They want the attention, right?
It's exciting and they're getting attention. Yes.
An adrenaline rush.
Absolutely. And these people that are killing more than one person, typically they get some type of a rush off of them. That's the reason they're doing it.
And I mean, this kind of ties into all three of the cases that we talked about today, because we also talked about the peanut butter sandwich spies. Do you think that TV and media and all of this helps criminals become better criminals?
No, I don't, because I think TV and stuff, they got it wrong. You know, they're trying to entertain you. So if you were to follow a case without a TV show, like what they're talking about, let's say Law and Order, for example, if you were to actually see really how the case went down, you'd fall asleep halfway through because it's really not that exciting. So they got to add stuff. So no, do I think it helps people be better criminals? I think it helps law enforcement, because they're going to do stupid things because they saw it on TV and it's going to get caught.
Right.
Or just me. I do stupid things because I saw it on TV.
I do that too.
Wait, so Jeff, I know that Robert Durst broke his parole and went back to Galveston, Texas, to the scene of the crime, and that often people do go back to the scene of the crime. Why?
That is that's something that's been done in FBI profiling for many, many years. We as as police officers, and when I was a police officer and detective, anytime there was a crime scene, what you want to do is you want to capture on video or pictures of the crowd standing around, because a lot of times your suspect is in that crowd. In the case I'm working right now, we have hundreds of volunteers coming out on weekends to search the desert. So, but we make them sign in through a website. So I have everybody's information, their vehicle, all that stuff. So I'm always going through it, and I start running backgrounds on people. So it is really common, really, really common for people to return to the scene of the crime, the suspects. That's just been going on. They want to see what they did. And sometimes they want to be involved in the investigation because they want to see where it's going, if they're going to get caught, or to hide evidence that they need to, if someone's turned on to.
And other than lawyers, what other resources are available to a serial killer or anybody that's involved in crime that has a lot of money versus somebody that doesn't?
You mean like to get them off?
Yes.
Well, shoot, money. There's a lot of celebrities that have committed some crimes that we've never heard of because money's been able to get their way through it. I'm not saying the system is corrupt. I'm saying that some of the places can be bought. I haven't seen it in my jurisdiction, but usually the better the attorney to fight against a defense lawyer or a public defender or something like that, the better the prosecutor. I've seen both. I've seen defense attorneys that people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for, and they go up against the prosecutor and they make the prosecutor look bad, and they usually will win the case because of how they presented the case. So other than lawyers, it could be resources to help them get what they need, what that lawyer needs to do things. Because that lawyer is going to hire an investigator. That investigator is going to go out, and it depends on if he's an investigator that wants to do good or wants to do bad. He can go out, he can screw up a crime scene, he can screw up the investigation, he can take police off of it, or he can actually work through it and be positive.
A lot to think about, Joe.
It's a lot to think about. Thank you so much for joining us today. You promise you'll come back with us?
I promise I will. I want to.
Pinky swear?
Okay. Let's do this.
Okay,
let's
Jeff. This. Okay. I'll text you from my burner phone when we need you.
Do it.
Okay, great.
When I get that. Oh, there it is.
Jeff, we need you all the time. Never leave us.
No, please have me back. I'm excited for this.
We will. Right. And we know you'll return to the scene of the crime, Jeff.
I always do. Always do. I'm always one step ahead, though.
Terrifying and amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jeff. We love you
very much. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Love you guys.
Thank you for your insight.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye.
I enjoyed it. We'll see you again. Bye.
Thank you, Jeff. And I think it's time to go to break. Teddy, Dimitri.
Let's take a little break, guys.
I think we could all use a break.
We'll be back in just a few moments.
Well, guys, that was so fun with Jeff. Please keep tuning in. Keep sending us any questions or theories that you have. Leah,
okay.
We need to start asking everybody what their thoughts are, because you and I are going to go back and forth, and we don't need Dimitri's opinion on where he thinks Kathy is.
Yeah,
Dimitri, I've been sending it in already.
Dimitri, no one has asked you to speak, but if you'd like to reach out to us on Instagram, also our Instagram is Real Time Crime Pod. And if you go to either me or Teddy's Instagrams, we both have it linked in our bios. Tell us what your theories are on where Brian Laundrie is. DM us. We will discuss this. Do you think Robert Durst committed all three murders? Where do you think Kathy Durst is? Teddy, do you have any bone-chilling questions?
Yeah. I mean, do you have a peanut allergy?
Yeah. How would you slip spy secrets? Would it be in a sneaker, in a gum wrapper? Would it be in a condom?
I mean, here's the thing. I don't even know how to get something out of my computer to slip it to somebody. I need all of the tips, guys. Send us all of the info.
I would be the worst spy because I have this habit of forgetting where I put everything. I lose literally everything. I lost my dignity years ago. Haven't been able to find it since, but
I did notice that. But either you. Way, guys, send us all the information, send us all of your thoughts, questions, any crimes you want us to investigate. Also, please send us your thoughts, because if not, we'll never stop talking.
DM us. And also, if someone wants to come over to my apartment and find where I put that $3,000 cash, I will give it all to you. I just don't know where I put it.
You're inviting people to your home on a crime podcast? Not a good idea.
Okay, let me go back in time. If I could do one redo on the whole podcast, it would be no one come to my house.
We'll talk to you guys next week. Talk to y'all soon.
At Real Time Crime Pod on Instagram.
At Real Time Crime Pod. I've been Leah Lamar and
Teddy Mellencamp, and sometimes Dimitri.
Barely. And sometimes Dimitri.
When I'm allowed.
Yeah. His first name actually is sometimes. And his last name, Dimitri. Sorry. Just felt like, all right, I hate myself.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
As Robert Durst would say, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, my God.
Great. We're quoting Robert Durst.
It's real time crime. It's real time crime. It's real
time. I mean, is it actually real time crime? Are we solving anything? Or is that just a thing we say? It's a thing we say. Got it. Okay.
See you next week for more real time crime, only on iHeartRadio.